I write how I speak, you know, just continue and full stop at the end. In the whole encounter of Mary and God, in response to that, the declaration is, with God, nothing is impossible. And most of us would just understandably see that in terms of God can do anything. But perhaps change the commas, hyphens, whatever you want to do there, and see that with God nothing is impossible. With God nothing is impossible. He's always on the move. It's impossible for him to stay still, to lapse, to not be bothered. And I love the thought of that, whether technically it's correct or not, don't care. I think it says something about God, and we love it because as we gather like this on a Sunday or in life groups or in whatever context, you know, there's always that sense of this is not just another routine morning. We might do a bit of a routine, sing songs, have a speaker, communion, all that goes with it, but God is active. And we love the fact that, you know, I think most of this year, you know, last week was incredibly powerful, wasn't it? As God met people and we worshipped and saw breakthroughs in people's lives. Just fantastic. Thanks, Jean. And so, 9 weeks ago, or nine sessions ago, I think we've had a couple of breaks in there. This is number nine. And the last one, Mark kicked us off what seems like ages ago, talking about walls and their significance. And here we go today, the last one. So this is the final countdown. Hillsong, just great out there with their songs. And you were all there, weren't you? Bit of Europe, was it, that did that? Anybody? Yeah. Do you want it again? So, here we go. And I want to sort of tie all this together. And we've done all these re's over the last few weeks, you know. And this week, trying to tie this up as we get hold of this sort of final bit of what happens with these walls and with Nehemiah. I suddenly get a letter through the post. I won't be somebody who advertises our product placement, so we'll say it's from Aliba, you know, who that great insurance company. So I get this letter through, genuine letter, that's the very one. And in there, the opening line of it says, I want you to review and renew. I'm like, this is from heaven. No, because they're asking for money. No. So, I don't know how you deal with all that sort of, you know, all them things, you know, the annual stuff that comes through like that. You know, whether you're one of those people who then intricately looks at all the fine print, small detail, check online for hours, see if there's something better because they're, you know, whatever. Or like many of people just sort of go, they were good last year, they were good the year before, boom, here's my 500 quid or whatever it might be that you're sort of paying out there. Review and renew. It's a constant invitation. We're reminded of it, you know, every day, like with my insurance here, that it's good to look at something and it's good to sort of check on, is this fit for the purpose that I need it for in the coming, whatever, in this case, the next year. And we're going to do that just over the next few minutes with this panorama of Nehemiah's story. Let me just recap and get us right up to point, and that will make sense, any of you that have not followed this all the way through, as to what I'm going to say this morning. So you go way back, there's 13 chapters, you go back to chapter 1, and Nehemiah responds to the news as a fully ordained Jew that the motherland that's now been reoccupied, they've been out in captivity, they're now back there, but over that time, the walls have been devastated, the walls of the city, the gates gates no longer stand on their hinges. And as Nehemiah hears this news, we know, we've repeated it often, he goes to his gaffer, who is the big man, Artaxerxes, and he seeks permission to go and somehow get involved in rebuilding these walls. And it's interesting in chapter 1, this is important to this morning, that as he speaks, the Bible records that they asked him how long this would take. And so he sets a time scale. He says to the king, you know, I'll be back at this certain point. This is before he knew what was going on. In 52 days, any sort of stuff that you read around this story will over and over emphasize the fact of to build these walls in 52 days is staggering in the sort of where they were then, let alone today with all the power tools and all the stuff that we've got. Incredible job. And last week we talked about him wearing the three hats. So he's initially announced as the cupbearer to the king. He then becomes the engineer, builder, project manager, whatever you want to call it. And then last week we see that then he gets appointed as the governor. So he's not just, and that's what we looked at last week, he's not just built the walls. Now he's got the bigger task of sort of getting Israel back to where they should be, the people of God, representing God in the world around. We aligned it up with our lives and how salvation affects us in that way. He's about 10 years the governor for all this renew and revitalized nation to come back together. And then he does as he says, and he returns back to Susa, chapter 1, verse 1, which is sort of modern day Iran, in and around there. So he's content, he's happy, he feels things are settled, you know, after all these years of all that's gone on. And so the king allows him to go back. We arrive to the final chapter of Nehemiah, chapter 13. So he returns all the way back to Jerusalem to see, to hear, to reconnect. As he gets there, man, his heart is broken. All these years of what he's done, and things have moved from that point massively away from where they were. Three things that are highlighted there that he's really upset about. Number one, in the sort of temple area, the tithes would be brought in for them to distribute. Not just the money, but actually, you know, the wheat and all the stuff that people had grown that they gave 10%. Why did they give that? Because that helped the Levites, the priests, the ministers do their job as a sort of employment. You see how this relates into modern day church. It also was the sort of running of the city and you know, almost like the taxes that we pay. And a big part of that went to help the poor, those that were in difficult situations. That wasn't happening. It all gone awry. All that stuff that was established, not just with Nehemiah, but all those years ago. The Sabbath that God had ordained that they should have as a day to reflect and rest and recuperate and focus on God is not happening. Suddenly the market traders have come in and they've seen the Sabbath as a day for marketing, for selling their goods and wares. And the third thing that was key to that was that they were intermarrying with foreigners, which is something that years before God had said shouldn't happen. And he comes back, and all these things are happening. Just pause before we move on and explain why it had happened. So that was about 10 years. So we're in 2023, you go back to 2013. That whole, you know, if I wrote to my 16-year-old self, not that I was 16, 2013. But just for a moment, just reflect. It doesn't have to be a 10-year cycle, but you know, over the last period of time, what are the headlines? Got married. You moved house, you know, some seismic and some quite small things. Moved job. Met somebody, you know. There's a load of things that have gone on in that period of time. But what about your experience with God? Would you say in let's say 10 years, if you've been a Christian that long, you've grown in any way, shape or form, you've got fresh stories to tell of the experience of God. If the, you know, the people who do any sort of MOT on you came and sort of had a look, would they be saying, "Ooh, you know when you take your car in and the mechanic does that hold?" And you think, "Oh gosh, yeah." How would God look at your experience now? However long you've known him, is there development? Is there growth? Is there maturity? Because maturity ultimately is not about just knowing more. It's about establishing our dependence upon God. That's what maturity is. Not growing independent of him, but getting more with him. Why? Here's the key to this that is scary. So Nehemiah wanders away. Well, not wanders. He goes back to Susa and obviously, like anybody, you know, you want to put the right people in the right places. Eliashib is the priest. And as Nehemiah goes away, he sort of hands responsibility. He continues as the governor, but from a distance. But he hands responsibility over to Eliashib. Now, this is the key bit, if you're following me. Eliashib's best buddy is Tobiah. If you know your Bible, that makes sense. Because right from the beginning of this story, there are two people who have been massive opponents of Nehemiah, Sanballat and Tobiah. As he hands responsibility over to Eliashib and goes away, Eliashib gives Tobiah room in the temple to operate and do. Seriously? The guy that from day one right up to this point has been the biggest opponent, has tried to outwit Nehemiah, has accused him to the authorities around of what he's doing, has tried to halt and stop the progress of these walls time and time again right throughout the story. Suddenly, when Nehemiah's out of the way, he's given space and room to operate. What has he done? You can read it right in chapter 13 there. He's moved his sort of stuff into these rooms and he's kicked out all the stuff that's there, that's all the God stuff. Wow. If that's not a provocation to each one of us. Ephesians 4:27. Do not give the devil a foothold. You know, somebody puts the foot in the door when you're trying to close it, so you can't close it, so they've still got a gap to keep talking. That's how Paul sees your Christian experience. If you give the devil a foothold, you know the classic, it's not in Proverbs, but you know, give him an inch and he'll take a mile and all that sort of thing. 1 Corinthians 4:27, bad company corrupts good character. So an obvious question, another pause. Who and what have you and I given room to, given occupancy to, that eases God out of the space? I've listed three or four. Discouragement. Because we've all been told that once you become a Christian, life's rosy, your bank account's full, the sun shines every day, everybody loves you, nobody ever speaks a word against you. Everybody experienced that? Nobody. Gosh. Good. That means you've got the Christian gospel right. But discouragement comes along. Of course it does. It's life. Things happen. Things come along that can really knock us into touch and we're discouraged, and somehow rather than going, you know, God, I need you, it's like, where is God? And suddenly we allow room for something to come into our hearts and minds. What about an out of control schedule? Shall I just sort of not ask about that one? Yeah? And the time you used to have for God suddenly isn't available anymore, or you've not made it available anymore. Move on. Lack of adventure. I've always seen the Christian journey as an adventure. I'm not obeying a set of rules. I'm enjoying a loving relationship with God. Yeah, there's expectation, of course there is, but first and foremost, I'm in love with God and I want to, so whatever he asks me to do, I'm quite happy with that because it's born out of relationship. That's what relationship, as we all know, is all about. And when that breaks down, that's when relationship breaks down. Lack of adventure. I don't feel the spark that others feel. I read stories. I get hold of books of people. You know, a couple of weeks ago when we had Reverend Mark from Nigeria, you know, and you just sit there in awe of a guy who's seeing his friends murdered and mutilated, but he talks about his faith in God and unstoppable. Discouragement, out of control schedule, lack of adventure, and sin. The stuff that God doesn't like. And it creeps in and we allow it some fertilizer and it grows. And as it grows, you know, when things grow, they just push everything out of the way. We've got a little bit of patio by our house and all the slabs, we've got some serious roots under there. You can't see them, but they're just disjointing all the flagstones. They're sticking up and it's only going to get worse, not better. Sin that creeps in there and takes its room. And well, I believe that today as we finish this, that God is just sending you a letter by what I'm going to say. And he's saying, guys, it's time to review. And it's time to renew. And yet the enemy is whispering, all is well, continue. You know the basics. You know that you're loved by God and that church is okay and the world's moving on. Just leave us as is. Don't check it. Don't have a look. Don't look in there. I think one of the best books in the Bible as a book of review and renew is the book of Psalms. I love Psalms, many of you do. Why? Because they're honest and raw, but faith-filled. These guys never deny God. They're just looking for him in the situations. And you get chapters like Psalms like 139, and the psalmist writes, Lord, you have searched me and you know me. You know when I sit and rise, when I rise and when I sit. Even if I go to the farthest depths, I'm not getting away from you. You were there. That sense of review and renew. When you get into the New Testament, I think Jesus did it with some of the questions he asked. Things had gone a little bit awry with Simon Peter. And so Jesus asked him the renew and review question. He says, do you love me? And Simon Peter has to do that sort of review in his mind, doesn't he? What's he getting at here? Clearly, he's got something in mind that he's wanting to say, and I'm assessing what he's asking me, and I need to respond, and I do. You, Lord, you know that I love you, and Jesus gives him a mission and a task to do. He says, "Come on, Peter, we're going to change the world." And God comes to us like he's doing this morning time and time again, perhaps with a different question, but the baseline of it all is, do you love me more than these? Where do I sit in the priorities of your life? How valued is my presence and my word and prayer and all the things that sustain our spiritual life? It's time to just review. Renew. You can base it on what had gone on here in Nehemiah's day as you review. And let me throw these out. This is what had gone wrong. People's contribution had gone awry, so they were having to reorganize themselves. What about you? It's interesting how COVID has made some massive changes for some people in their lives, in their faith journey, in their church journey as part of a family. And the contribution in terms of serving, contribution in terms of things like finance. You know, where it's not about us begging for money and saying we need more in the pot here. the baseline of giving is we're saying to God, we thank you deeply for all that you provided for us. And out of our trust that you're going to help us use this wisely, you know, here's our contribution, like it was then, to pay the bills effectively. You know, the Levites were the recipients, you know, the ministers. And then the running of the city and all its celebrations. Yeah, that's church, isn't it? And then along with that, the giving to the poor and supporting those in need. That was written all those thousands of years ago and is still very much the baseline of today with your contribution in terms of finance, in terms of time, in terms of serving. Review. Renew. You're missing out on incredible blessing. Influence. So the contribution. Influence. Who do you mix with and what influence do they have? And this isn't only mixed with Christian people. Of course not. It's a bit ghetto then, isn't it? But actually, at the sharp end of it, are there people, things, situations around you that are diluting the presence of God in your life? Some of those non-Christian friends are great for growing you in faith. When they ask the questions and go, hey, you know, you're one of them, whatever you call them, born again in things people. So what do you think about X, Y, Z? Sometimes we sweat a bit going, I don't know, ask Wendy. But also, hopefully, it makes us just look and review and renew. What do I believe about this? And God at the heart of it. Might have to go back to the Bible or speak to somebody or read something and concrete my faith back down there because I actually do believe this about God. Contribution, influence, Sabbath. Let me speak to those who have known Jesus a few years now. And use the word, are you just cruising? You know the book. You probably could quote some great parts of it. You know there's at least two parts to it, a new and an old. Well done. Are you cruising? Or is there time for God? You're making time for God. However that might work for you in the routine of your life. Nobody else's. You are you. You've got the pressures you've got. You've got the diary that you've got. Where? So as we review and renew, let me finish with a question Jesus asked. Many of you know it well, but I think it's foundational to our faith. He was sat in it, and of course, all the time he was trying to get them to understand who he was, where he had come from, and what he'd come to deliver, that God was his Father, he was part of this great Trinity, that he'd come down as God, and that the kingdom of God was being worked out now through him and ongoing through you, and he's constantly trying to feed that into these guys and give them a bit of an exam to see how they're doing, how it's sort of, you know, like you and I, when we take a test or an exam, you know, it's to determine how much we've taken in or how much we've learned. And Jesus says, so who do people say that I am? Great question. Who do people? And they answer correctly, in a sense, really. The people are saying, you're Elijah or John the Baptist reincarnate or one of the prophets. Of course people are saying that with the miracles and the talks and the authorities speaking with. And they think, oh, good answer, mate. Number one, sorted, 10 out of 10. But who do you say that I am? Makes it very personal. Not who do people say, who do you say that I am? And you know, it's like, oh, I need the loo. Yeah? Not I need the loo, I mean like, you know, when they ask the question, not I'm going. Yeah, because you don't really know how to handle this question here because he's looking me in the eye and he's saying, Fiona, who do you say that I am? I don't know. I don't know how you picture that scenario where it's like, Rob, come on, mate, you're wise. You know, they're elbowing one another. They're all different, you know, academically and everything. And they're all looking at one another. There's that awkward, like, moment. And Simon Peter stands up, the gobby one. Greet that for talks a lot. You are the Christ, the Son of the living God. And I think Jesus goes, yes! In Hebrew. And he looks back and he looks at him and he says, that is great, Simon Peter. You haven't just made that up. That's been revealed by God to you. And then he follows it up by saying this. On this rock I will build my church. Put all that together. And I think I can confidently sort of say, if it's Ian that's answering me, so who do you say that I am? You're the Christ, the Son of the living God. Great. That's a foundation on which I can build. Why do I say that? Because the bottom line of all of this is what you believe about God and Jesus is the basis of everything that you do. If you think he's just some distant power out there that's not interested in anybody or anything, but now and then he might nudge one or two people, your life will be based on that. Get on with it, sort yourself out. Don't worry about anything else because there's nothing to have any influence on me. However, if you're a Simon Peter and you actually believe that God was manifesting Christ and that now lives inside of you because of the faith you've shown in him, that makes the world a very different place for me to live in. That makes all my prayers so, so different. That makes the way that I live and the way that I look at things so, so different. And so as we review and renew, I don't know how things are with your life, whether Nehemiah would come back and go, hey, you're doing good, man. All that we set in place has grown. You've added to it. One or two things are right, but actually you're doing great. Or whether he'd come back like he did to these people. And actually it says, is Maria not here? Great, I can tell you this. We were just going through this in our like little staff meeting the other day. And it actually says in there, he got so annoyed, chapter 13, it's there, with particularly with the people who had intermarried. It said, I went and I beat them and pulled their hair out. I said that, and Maria went, yeah, I do that every time you walk in. It's just like, get. I love her. That's how Nehemiah got with this thing. He got angry about the whole thing. Didn't Jesus get a little bit angry when something similar happened in the temple all those years later and he comes in and he kicks over the tables? Not metaphorically, he kicks over the tables. He's annoyed at what's happened to the house of God, that's house of prayer. And he's, guys, do you not listen? Do you not know what this is all about? Review and renew. Here's my question. Who do you say that he is? Pause. If this were a seminar and I was asking you to write a word on a bit of paper that sums up how you feel about Jesus, would it be a technical phrase, saviour? That's technical. There doesn't seem that much emotion, personal relationship with that. It's factual, I'm not saying it's wrong. But how many of you would share something more intimate, personal? Lover, friend, forgiver, my hope, my day, my life, my happy place. Something that really makes that attachment that says, God, I'm not just here obeying rules. I'm not just coming to church because I like the people. The foundation of it all, God, is I love you. You've come into my life. You've restored all that I'm meant to be as a human being and still growing in that. And I want to pursue that. Time to review and renew. Who do you say that he is? Would you stand with me for a moment? If you don't mind, thank you. So imagination world. You've got that little pen and paper right in front of you, that little post-it note. And I'm saying to you, I need, and I'm not going to ask you to say anything, I need an answer on there. God needs to look. Who do you say that he is? What are you, look at your bit of paper. Go on. What are you writing on there? What's your answer to the question? As you review your faith, your journey with God, what does that mean?
to you, to God? How is he responding now to whatever word you've put on there? That's a beautiful moment to just review. How do I feel about you, God? Now, just stare at that word that you've written on that bit of paper. And say to yourself, what am I doing about growing more of that? If you put down there, for instance, that he's your lover, is there intimacy with you and God? If God had a fridge, your face would be on it, the fridge magnet. He sends us flowers at springtime. He's shown he loves us. He's committed himself to us. And if lover is the word that I'm using, I want to be your lover, God. I don't want it to be a word. I want it to be an experience. I want to feel you. The adventure of knowing you. If he's your happy place, then do you go to him often? Is it a place you wander into? Is that connection there? If he's your forgiver, do you live a life of forgiveness to others? Is that replicated in the way that you operate? Hope. If you've written down that is your hope, do you live that to other people? Because the seed of God has been deposited in us, so we're not here to point to God and say, this is God. Actually, people are looking at us and seeing God in us. This is the representation of God. That's what Jesus was, and that's what he's left with us. How am I replicating Jesus in my response, reaction, behavior, language? How I deal with my finances, how I speak to my family and kids, how I respond to people at work who wind me up. Oh God, oh God, oh God. Let's stay stirred, Rob. Let's just worship the Lord for a moment. I just want to take the opportunity as we worship, just to where you stood, just respond. We've reviewed, we've put that letter on that piece of paper, and now we're renewing. I'm going back to these people and saying, I'm happy with what you've offered me. I'm in. Here's your money. Are you the same with God? God, I like what you do in my life. And I commit myself to you afresh this morning. On this day, the 2nd of July, 2023, make the days ahead full of adventure, full of love, full of hope, full of faith. But what do I do to make that happen? I can't just sit here like watching some TV program and it all happens before me. I have to engage with that. God, let's worship together as we renew. Sounds good. I search the world, but it couldn't fill me. A man's empty grave, treasures of faith, I've never enough. Then you came along. Beautiful. Sounds good. Put me back together.
Every desire is outside your sight.
Here in your love. Tell him.